Listening to the Afternoon Commute with John Adams of HoaxBustersCall.com and Aberrato of Fakeologist.com. You can find past shows at audiochat.fakeologist.com. You'll also find instructions on how to join in and add your voice to this very special community. Now, on with the call.
John Adams, we finally meet up. How are you? How have you been? How's your summer so far? Well, spring so far.
I'm doing well, yes. Good to talk to you. How have you been, sir?
Been well. Sort of laying low on the audios for a while everywhere, including this conference call. Sometimes you just get burned out, or you just take on others. I hadn't been talking to really anyone, including yourself, because I really didn't have much motivation to talk, because yeah, just up to thinking about it is a lot worse than just actually doing the chatting.
Oh, yes.
Sometimes that gets the better of you. Think, well, I have nothing you would say. I don't probably have anything useful to say right now either, but some people like to listen to other people's phone calls and other people's life experiences, including myself. So I'll give a few, and maybe you can give a few and make it somewhat interesting to the general listenership.
I'm sure we can brew something up, yeah. So
I just want Chris to talk on your latest weekly commute, afternoon commute, and just to remind myself of who you were, and I know who Chris is, of course, because he's on every week, and I usually catch his HoaxBustersCall.com every week.
Yes, I catch it as well. Sometimes I unmute myself, too.
It's funny, because when you call in, you must be trying to be quiet, because you have your quiet voice on when you call in.
That's right.
Are you calling from beside your significant other? Or are you under the bed, or do you go to the basement?
No, I just go to the other room, but I don't want to, you know, be too loud. Not as loud as I can be talking in the car.
Well, you're not even loud anyway. You don't get really animated. You have a very level tone to your delivery, so it's funny. All you do is seem to lower the audio. You don't lower necessarily the enthusiasm, because you do have a bit of a monotone to your delivery.
Yeah, that's the psychological me trying to remain objective, just level.
Yeah, you don't get enthusiastic too much. Yeah, you're just delivering the information and let people get enthusiastic about it, I suppose.
I'll let Alex Jones get enthusiastic for both of us.
Yeah, I don't listen to the guy much, do you? Well, I haven't listened to him at all for years, but do you?
I listened to him a couple of times this year, but I don't know. It's never good outside of 20 minutes of, you know, 20 minutes, but that's about it, and then I turn it off.
Do you sometimes Jones for Jones?
I used to more when I you know, maybe a couple of years ago, but, you know, it's like trying to go back to watching wrestling after you know it's fake.
Speaking of which, I don't know if you follow my audio chats, but
yes.
I did watch a movie relating to worldwide wrestling. I don't know if you're interested in them. One is called Bigger, Better, Stronger, and another was Prescription Thugs by the same guy, Chris Bell.
Yeah, Chris Bell, right. Yeah, I saw your post on that. Yeah, that looks interesting. I don't think you can't watch that on YouTube, though, right? It's on Netflix.
I don't have Netflix. I refuse to subscribe to Netflix. But the first one I mentioned is on YouTube.
Oh, it is?
And
okay.
The second one is on the Torrent movie delivery system.
And okay.
I'll need to research, figure out how to do that. It's not hard.
Sure. Yeah, I'll have to check those out.
The drug underbelly of, I would say, all sports entertainment.
Sure. Absolutely.
In case the average young buck or young female, young doe, is interested in getting into some of the higher-end, higher entertainment sports, I think it's physically very demanding, no matter how skilled you are, and taking some kind of artificial drug to ameliorate the pain and the wear and tear on the muscles is very, very tempting. And I'm sure that most people are led to temptation by nefarious forces that surround them.
Absolutely. It's mainly the digestive system, the liver, that you got to worry about when you're taking those drugs, because that's what's going to kick off all of the other stuff. It's your body deciding, hey, I've got to take care of this first instead of the, McDonald's that you just ate.
Yeah.
And so, I think a lot of the stuff that, even the drugs, those type of things, it has to do with the body processing it and not being able to process it. And then that's where you start to see the breakdown. But, yeah, of course, people taking painkillers as well. It's not only the steroids, it's the painkiller addiction. There was a movie a while back. It was, what was that one called? Beyond the Mat. And that's the one where they interviewed Jake the Snake Roberts. And Jake the Snake was basically addicted to painkillers. And he would take uppers to be able to go wrestle, and then he would take downers to kill the pain afterwards.
Interesting.
And those guys...
A roller coaster of toxicity.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only that, but if you get on the bad side of Vince McMahon, then you lose your job as well. And then, like Jake the Snake, he would end up wrestling in high school gymnasiums for local shows in, Iowa or somewhere, and went from a mega rock star wrestler to barely being able to pay his hotel bills and gas to get to an event.
Yeah, sounds like Elvis.
Or Elvis's twin brother.
Yeah, I can't, my head spins on those topics, whether Miles Mathis you're referring to, I think, did a pretty good expose on Elvis, and I'm not sure if I should believe Miles either, unfortunately. He's been accused of a lot of entering a lot of disinfo into the arena, so I don't know what to believe now.
I think he has a lot of great information, and he's got a lot of bad info too. So he's just from my perspective, I think he makes some great points, especially with that Elvis one and the John Lennon one. Got some really interesting stuff in there that I didn't even know. And but then he goes, when you get into the photo analyzing, that's when I start to nod off, because I just don't see how anybody could be that absolute about something with a photo that you're looking at online. It's kind of nebulous at a certain point.
Yeah. He also really makes the point of going into the Jewish angle with everybody, linking everything to a Jew. And once more, I don't know what to think about that anymore, because everyone that seems to be proponents of good information always has to bring that up now. Of course, it makes me wonder if there is something to it, of course, and what does it mean, and here we go again, and it's a third rail discussion for most researchers.
Well, even if there was something to it, we don't know what that is, and the people who push that type of stuff don't have a good explanation either. So
yeah.
That's why I can recognize that there is, there's a lot of stuff along those lines. Yes, there's a lot of people who are Jewish who run Hollywood or run banks or that type of stuff, but nobody can give an actual real good explanation as to what that means. Does that mean they run the world? Well, not technically, because there's other people of other races and nationalities or whatever you want to call it involved with it as well. So, you've heard Chris and myself discuss this many times, so it's
a topic that I could say his name. I think he accused me of not saying his name. Negan Tropic brought up and likes to ring up and dominate the calls with. I know Chris has a very patient manner to him, but it's the only time I ever hear him get really impatient when Negan Tropic calls in, whatever that guy's real name is, or first name anyway. But Chris gets very aggravated, and I think, of course, that's Negan Tropic's thesis, is that the Jews, and here they are, here's all the evidence, and then he puts a 10-page comment in amongst small comments, complete with animated GIFs.
Yes, that is true. Yeah, and I don't think Chris would mind me saying that. Yeah, that tends to, when someone keeps going over something over and over again, after it's kind of a dead horse, I think Chris tends to get aggravated, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, there's only a couple things that aggravate Chris. I think flat Earth and it's the Jews. Those things get pretty riled up. If you could bring them up in the same paragraph, he'd really blow his lid, wouldn't he?
Well, yes. You could tell him that the top of the Earth is flat and it's actually got a yarmulke on top of it.
Yeah, and they rule the top. They rule from the top of the Earth. The part that's facing the sun, by the way, all the time, but it's cold most of the year. I don't know. That whole debate has my head spinning. I still don't mind listening to the boys, the three main boys or two main guys talking about it, because they do always make sense to me, which is frustrating in a way, but it's fun in another way.
Yes.
I'm talking about the Globusters guys. I think they really have... They come across as amateurs. They don't sound like they're the military, and they're really good at speculating, and it's just fun to listen to and hear people talk out loud and show stuff, and they don't... I just can't see them as part of a COINTELPRO group at all.
Well,
the good
thing about you, Tim, is you're always open to... you're open to listening to what other people have to say about stuff, even if you don't necessarily disagree with it or don't necessarily agree with it. And you're always looking for, you know, new information as the, you know, some clue as to what it is. So whereas Flat Earth might not be a resolved for you, you're still interested in it. I don't know. I've always maintained I don't know what we're on. I was just on a plane recently, so the Earth looks flat from a plane, but there's a lot of good points on both sides of the issue, but I just don't know. I have no clue as to what it is, whether it's a sphere or if it's a flat Earth, and I've always said I have no idea.
Well, and I don't think I'll be convinced until someone that's really official says something about it, unfortunately, which I shouldn't really be waiting for that to ever happen, but I really would need an authoritative figure or group of figures or to do something and say something about it before I listen to 100 YouTubers talking about it. I don't want to take away from the YouTubers because I really wish that there was a grassroots out there to talk about all the different things, because I want to give them more credit than they're officially given by any official group. Because I think there's real people that are somewhere. There are real witnesses and there are real thinkers all over the place. It's just without credentials.
Right. And so that's where you get into a kind of a sticky area with a lot of the stuff that we tend to talk about as a somewhat of a community is you don't want to defer to experts for everything, because you yourself could be just as well informed about something as someone else. But then there's certain fields that you would definitely need to be an expert in, and that wouldn't be deferring to authority in an arbitrary manner. It would be like, you know, I'm going to take my car to a mechanic because a mechanic knows how to fix a car, or I'm going to defer to someone with an engineering degree about how buildings are built because that's what engineers work on. Or designing a building would come from an architect or something, you know, things like that where there's when you're talking about the skill of understanding how something works. Now, does that mean that those people can't be misinformed about certain things? Well, you definitely don't want just, you know, any old whatever scientist, you know, start saying that global warming's real and it's because they're a scientist that they know. Because most of the people who come out and talk about something like global warming, they're not even climatologists themselves. Not that that means anything to be a climatologist, but most people say, oh, well, I'm part of the scientific community, and this is what the scientific community says. And so, you know, but if, here's something you'll actually find funny and interesting. I was at a party one time, and there was an engineer there, and so somebody wrangled me into a conversation with this guy that I had no idea I was about to get into a conversation with him. And they said, oh yeah, John over here is a 9/11 conspiracy theorist.
Ooh, what an introduction.
Right.
Did you have a badge?
I'm like, oh man. And so this guy says, Well, this guy's an engineer, so he could tell you about how those buildings fell down. Here's what he said. I'm not kidding about this. He said seismic rumbling caused the collapse. Seismic rumbling. And I said to him, well, what do you mean seismic rumbling? He's all, seismic rumbling can topple buildings. It happens all the time. I'm all, it does?
When? Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I said to him. I'm all, I've never actually heard of a building collapse. I'm all, wouldn't, like, buildings in California be collapsing left and right? He's all, yeah, they do. They do collapse. I'm all, I haven't really heard of that before. I'm all, I can understand. And you know, when you see buildings from collapsing from earthquakes, they look a lot different than when they're collapsing from alleged planes crashing into them and allegedly toppling them because of jet fuel. But that's what his theory was. His theory was that, yes, the buildings become weak because of seismic rumbling. So apparently he didn't know what he was talking about either.
Well, it sounds good, so, except we know what seismic waves and...
But the thing that worried me was that all of these buildings that I thought were safe, that I worked in big, you know, 40-story tall buildings and things like that, and made deliveries into skyscrapers in downtown L.A. And yeah. You know, now I'm worried about the seismic rumbling.
Well, don't forget small office fires. They can melt steel and collapse buildings after a while as well. But that was the funniest explanation for the 9/11 World Trade Center destruction, all these small office fires that were caused by flying debris.
Yes.
All completely unbelievable to a thinking person, but because the collective conscious has already been sold, there's not much to say or not much to do about it, really.
No. Yeah, what are you going to do? But...
it's the collective disillusionment or delusion, and Scott Adams, the creator of Dilbert, has a pretty good blog. I don't know if you've seen my links to him on my website, fakeologist.com, or my sublog, Morab, M-O-R-E-A-B .fakeologist.com, which is sort of underneath the blog, where I don't fakeologist-type information. But Scott Adams is analyzing the Trump-Hillary race from a persuasion hypnosis type angle, and it's really fascinating to read his analysis of these two persuasion experts. Well, he calls Trump a persuasion expert, not so much Hillary yet, although he said she's now adopting a lot of persuasion tactics at Trump. And it really boils down to how the facts don't matter at all in the election. The specifics have no impact on voters. It's basically very simple persuasion themes that get people to vote, as if voting counted, but we'll just take it right now as if it does count. And he's just, it's really instructional reading his stuff because it speaks to everything that we talk about in terms of psychological operations and just the things, the collective beliefs, from science to news to everything. People
yes,
are criticized.
Absolutely. And I've said this before. I said this when Lennon Honor was on with Chris and myself, and he concurred. Chris concurred. 9/11 was, you know, people call 9/11 the movie. I call it 9/11 the commercial because it was part of mass persuasion, and that's what it was. It was a carefully constructed commercial for the war on terror, and so persuasion is it's good you brought this up because I'm actually reading a book currently on persuasion. I've mentioned it the past two calls I've had with Chris. And it's not directly dealing with persuasion, but it's dealing with the way people formulate ideas in their mind and the difference between physical reality and the reality of the mind and how those two can be manipulated based off of what people picture in their mind and what they picture reality to be. I've seen the stuff that you've posted about Scott Adams, and I've heard him mentioned on No Agenda, and they played that little interview with him with Bill Maher. It's all very interesting when you do hear, I haven't heard much of the election stuff or, you know, what guys are saying except for what they play on No Agenda. But that's all anything is anyways, if you're not planning on delivering a product. I'm sure at a certain level, Donald Trump must be aware that he's not really going to, you know, do much as president if he were to get elected. I mean, these people have to know at some level, like, okay, there's only really so much you can do, and you're going to be like a puppet CEO, like he is already. And, you know, he's probably really good at being in business meetings and selling people on ideas and using neuro-linguistic programming. And so that's all you really need to do in an election anyways. And I think as time goes on, more of these techniques are kind of are built upon. But it's interesting, too, to note that as the public becomes more distracted just in their daily life with everybody's stuff, and there are more things that become more important than other things. It's like a trick. It's a rigged game. It's like we've got these more advanced persuasion tactics that have been advancing steadily since Vance Packard wrote his book in the 1950s called The Hidden Persuaders, where he let the cat out of the bag about the world of advertising, and he was probably allowed to do that most likely. But on top of it, people are, for lack of a better word, they're not getting dumber, but they're becoming more dumbed down. So, you know, it's an illusion. You know, public relations and persuasion is already an illusion.
Sure,
and
right.
Then, yeah, so it's already an illusion. It's already just making someone believe in a product, that this product does something. It's, you know, you go back and look at a Life magazine from the 1960s and look at all the advertisements in the golden age of advertising, as it was called, and they're literally selling you, you know, everything from cars to whiskey to dinnerware as life-changing products. And so this is far more advanced along these lines now, where the presidential candidates are life-changing products. And there's actually a book out. I haven't read it all the way through, and I really want to. I want to go back and kind of look at this at some point. But there was a book, I can't remember who it was written by, but it was called The Making of the President, The Selling of the President. And it was a book written about the JFK campaign. So I need to go back and read that book. But yeah, it was a pretty mainstream book where they just talked about the campaign to sell JFK to the public as the be all and end all of presidents during his election.
Yeah, and they must have positioned him to being a man of the people, for the people, the little guy, and all that. I would think maybe, because the idea, I guess, was to take him away early to let people know they can't really have anyone that's on their side. We really need the tough authoritarian business corporate president, maybe. I don't know. I thought that might have been a theme.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, people had pictures, framed pictures of JFK in their house.
Yeah, he was president, yeah.
Yeah, he was godlike.
Wow. So they really must have built him up and sold him quite strongly.
Yeah, he was the right guy to come along at the perfect time, because at that particular time period in the early 60s, they really were pushing the UN and world peace and all this type of stuff, because there hadn't really been a significant war since Korea. And so you had almost 10 years of peace at that point, you know, quote unquote peace. And so it appeared, I'm sure by that time, because of the prosperity of the 1950s and all of the bubbles that were being worked through at that point, the artificial subsidization of industry and things like that, made it appear as if it was very prosperous and it was a very peaceful time period. So they brought along JFK. He was going to be the great uniter. He was going to, you know, the United Nations was going to make everything great and wonderful. And then it's interesting, too, because once JFK faked his death, that's when it all went to pot. Remember, that's when it all went downhill from that point. And
yeah,
we would have never gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. We would have never gone into Vietnam if it hadn't have been for, you know, JFK. But I think,
yeah, he was going to save everybody from bad things that happens with government. Yeah.
Every bad thing. He was going to save. He was going to get rid of the Federal Reserve and the CIA and he was going to get rid of. I mean, that's some of the lore of the alternative media that JFK was going to, you know, what's the one? Yeah, he's going to get rid of the Federal Reserve. He's going to bring in silver-backed $5 bills. And it's interesting, too, because my uncle owned a coin store, and he actually had some of those $5 silver-backed currency.
Okay.
So that was a real thing. Can you hold on 1 second real quick, Tim?
Okay. JFK.
JFK, welcome back to the program. Yeah,
we will get rid of the Federal Reserve. We will get rid of the Federal Reserve, and we will get. I will smash the CIA into 1,000 pieces. Can't do it good, JFK.
Yeah. Too bad. I was listening to some of JFK's old stuff. There's a guy on YouTube, Dave Vaughn, somebody who puts all the old JFK stuff audios online, and it gets a little tedious knowing what we know now. But there is a good archive. A good archivist of JFK material on YouTube that someone might be interested in digging into besides the JFK stuff. A good speaker.
I mean, so was Ronald Reagan was a good speaker, Bill Clinton. You know, they have a good knack for appealing, I understand. It's not like it goes misunderstood why people buy into this stuff. So I understand it. And why their speeches are so, you know, these guys are great, good speakers, and they're endearing. It's also funny family members. I remember telling them, you know, you can understand why people like Bill Clinton because he's well spoken and he appeals to them, and then they always have an emotional reaction to that when they're not. You know, Democrats or Republicans, I don't like Bill Clinton. He's not a good speaker. And I'm like, well, you're only saying that because you're a Republican, because you're tied to it emotionally. You don't like Bill Clinton because he doesn't stand for the things that you do. But that's one thing that people can't break away from those particular viewpoints to see that, well, yeah, these guys are good at doing what they're doing to appeal to the people that they're supposed to be appealing to. And they succeed in appealing to the people that they're supposed to appeal to, but they also succeed in angering and creating opposition to them, to the people that they're supposed to be. You know, this is something, do you remember when Hillary Clinton, somebody asked Hillary Clinton what her favorite book was, and she said it was Brave New World.
I try not too much about her, other than, of course, what the No Agenda Show brings up.
Yeah, this was some years ago. Maybe it was even during the last election when she was, you know, vying against Obama in the 2008. And something came up, and they asked her what her favorite book was, and she said her favorite book was Brave New World.
Right. And did she say why?
I can't remember if she said why or not, but let's just say that's not a
that's not a mainstream response. Not too many people would bring that up unless maybe they were told to bring it up. And
exactly. So of course the right wingers latched onto that and ran with it, saying, oh look, Hillary Clinton reads Brave New World because that's what she wants to do.
Yeah.
Right, that's why she likes that book, and they, you know, and so it was a big, big old thing. Oh, she likes Brave New World because she's going to bring in a one world government, and it's going to be a liberal run one world government with a bunch of Marxists and socialists all. And so those people give these answers for that purpose, because people don't factor in that the politicians will say things to make their opposition react as well, because that's part of their job is people think that they're just paying lip service to all the people that they like, but they also are creating a persona that for people to dislike as well.
Yeah, it's a dialectic, I suppose. All the politics are far more in common with each other than the common man. So, yeah, they work together to get what they want, and that's part of the system anyway, where it's explained to the people that these people have to work together if they want to get everything done. So, yeah, they have far more in common with each other than they do with us.
Yeah, and that's part of Donald Trump's thing. It's not just persuasion. The way that Scott Adams is analyzing it is correct, but it's very it's kind of polarized. So I agree with what he's talking about, but he doesn't have the other half of it. Is that Trump is playing a part?
Yeah,
he's playing a role, and part of his role is to piss people off and make people mad.
Trying to make a clear contrast to Hillary Clinton. He's trying to make a clearer choice. As well, perhaps.
Yes.
Stark contrast. He's a man, she's a woman, he's supposed to be an outsider, she's an insider. The contrasts go on and on and on.
Yeah, let me ask you a question. So, I know you and I both, we don't agree with the majority of what No Agenda's conclusions are when it comes to the way the world works. But they are entertaining to listen to, no doubt. One thing that Dvorak likes to throw around is that the media is totally clueless and they're being played by Trump. What do you think of that?
Well, the No Agenda show, I still think it's worth listening to because they bring up a lot of stuff that I'm interested in that isn't necessarily fakery-related, computer stuff, technology stuff. But they definitely do not buy into the idea that the media is the instrument of control, especially when it comes to politics. They always gloss over psyops. They always give them a very cursory, giggly review, including the UCLA one. They never come to the conclusion that they are military-led media drill creation, merging of the media and the military to create a cultural effect. They never acknowledge that ever. They always just scratch their heads and say, oh, this is odd, this is an anomaly, and this guy was on meds, and geez, they never consider the whole thing as completely orchestrated, ever. And I tweet to them, maybe other people send emails to them to say, hey, clue in, guys, this is Media Fakery 101. I know you guys are in the alternative media. I know you're trying to make a living. I don't know if talking like this, like a psychologist, would affect the bottom line. I tend to think it would. And if you add up, like I do, all the donations, they're both drawing a really great salary.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, you know, Adam Curry goes all over the place.
Yeah.
Got to be expensive.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's a single guy and doesn't have any child support or anything like that. And I that's okay. People do travel. Traveling to Europe doesn't cost $1 million. There are discount airlines. I'm not going to say that that's a tip-off that he's being funded by the establishment, but on the other hand, his lack of acknowledgement is really troubling, and maybe he just turns a blind eye to it because he thinks it'll affect the bottom line. He is running a business.
Yeah, that's what I was implying. I wasn't implying that he was bad for traveling, but or that, yeah, I agree with you there, that there's certain things that are, like, so obvious, and I think that they've actually, that in more recent years, they've actually backed off a lot of things, especially Curry, whereas he actually used to be a little bit more open to the idea that these things were fake.
Yeah, he's more skeptical. Well, money corrupts, and if they're making a great living, and things are going well, everyone's natural instinct is just to stay the course if the river is flowing your way. So then they just promote more of the same message over and over again, and it becomes a trap for thinking outside the box if things are going really well. So I'm really torn whether I should send a donation or not. Honestly, I might do it just to get the mention, because I do understand their model. I think it is a valid model. I really do. I don't like memberships. I think donations are a good. A pure model. It's not immune to corruption, but I still think it's probably one of the best systems of support if you do think that they are really grassroots and organic and don't get any military support, which I would have no proof of.
Right. Well, the thing about the media that, you know, obviously I could think that some, you know, lower-level people, journalists and things like that, they're probably clueless to certain things, no doubt. But to think that Trump is pulling one over on the people who run the media is ridiculous. And to think that, oh, Trump's just so smart that he knows how to get promoted through the media by, you know, making fun of the media, and that the media is not playing a role in the promotion of him as an outsider. See, that's the other thing people don't understand either, is that the media's hatred, or, you know, playing the role of being the hater of Donald Trump, only makes Trump more popular.
Yeah, and Trump is unique. We haven't seen a style of politician like him before, so we don't have a lot to compare to. And therefore,
not
in this generation, maybe past generations.
Yeah, actually, I'm looking into this right now, and I mentioned this a couple of times, and sometime in the future I'll have a special report on it. But he's actually, and I actually heard No Agenda mention this just on the recent one, which I'm not saying that they listen to Hoaxbusters. I doubt they do. But Dvorak made a comparison of him to Barry Goldwater after I've made that twice, because I've looked into Barry Goldwater here just because of something that I'm looking into for a special report.
Okay.
And I started seeing these large, large similarities to Barry Goldwater with Trump. And it was almost as if they were, they're just playing a role that comes out every so often. And
was Barry Goldwater the Nixon era?
Yeah, he was all the way through the entire 60s. He was he would always run for president. He became the nominee when Johnson ran for a second term, I think it was. Or Johnson didn't run for a second term. When Johnson came up for re-election. So when Johnson took over for Kennedy, and then in, what, 64, he had to run again as the president, Goldwater was the Republican nominee at that point. But he would make a lot of bombastic statements, just like Trump does, and if you just replace terrorists and Muslims with communists and Russians, then they have a lot of the same speeches and things like that.
Yeah, there's nothing new under the sun, but of course nobody knows Barry Goldwater of this generation, so Trump is brand new. This is all new material, but yeah, it'll be interesting if you can drag up some comparison, some direct lifting of speeches and whatnot, because
yeah,
the collective has no concept of history, and the politicians of the day, as speechwriters, CIA of the day, they take advantage of that collective amnesia, or just not knowing. They don't even know they don't know.
That's true.
It's an unknown known, or unknown unknown.
Yes, and you know, Donald Trump is a perpetual celebrity. I mean, he's been a celebrity from day one for not really doing anything, for just being rich.
Yeah.
Allegedly. So he was back in the days of Studio 54. You know, back in the late 70s, early 80s, New York disco party scene, rich people, that sort of thing. That's when he started getting popular, just for the fact that his wife was good looking and he was rich. And
he's played the role of the boastful American that most world citizens can't stand. They just
right.
don't like him. He's just offensive. He's offending the chattering classes right now, because he speaks his mind, and most of it is nonsensical and provocative, just to get a rise out of people. And he's playing a role, and he's always played a role, like you said. And it's, for the most part, it's just annoying to thinking people. It attracts the lower classes. They like that stuff because they want to stick it to the man. Everyone wants to stick it to the man, the elite, the people with all the money and the power. That's just a natural thing. Or in the past, the king. Everyone would probably want to stick it to the king if they could.
That's what he portrays.
And, yeah, he's playing a role. And in the end, it doesn't matter, really, as we know, who runs the place, because they're just following orders. It's just a huge system that's run by other systems. And you couldn't do anything to change it if you wanted to, I don't think.
No, I don't think so either. But just knowing that is good enough to go about your life and know that you don't have to participate in the mass mind control.
Yeah, just go along and pay your taxes.
Whatever. I was born into it. Got to do it.
If you want to even drive on their roads and eat their food, you're going to have to do it. You're going to have to suck it up and just try and keep one foot in and one foot out, but unfortunately, you're just going to have to straddle the line the whole time. You can't start your own country, your own system. It's not going to happen in any reasonable level in any way.
Yeah, certainly certainly not if you're supporting a family or, you know, part of a family,
no.
That's for sure.
Yeah, but, you know, I listen to the No Agenda show again, getting back to it, because they are alternative enough for me to enjoy listening to, and they bring up a lot of topics that I would never listen to election coverage from the mainstream. So I don't mind hearing about it, because if you want to associate with regular people like I do, you have to. It's important to know a little bit about what's going on in the mainstream. So these guys at least perform a function for me that they bring the mainstream news clips and then they pound them with their skepticism and their sarcasm, and at least I have an idea what's being said. For instance, someone brought up today at the Trump University story from last week. I'd never heard of it. I didn't know anything about it, but at least the No Agenda show had brought it up a little bit. So I had some knowledge of it. So I had something to say to these people. Otherwise, I would never listen to this garbage, because I'd rather listen to other people talk about other things. There's only so much time, and
yeah,
I'm not worried. I'll get wrapped up.
Yeah, I agree. I like their humor. I like their sarcasm, and I think they put on they're good entertainment, definitely. But I definitely don't agree with a lot of their conclusions, and like you said, yeah, it's good to know a little bit about stuff that's going on out there. And just the brief exposure I had to television without even hearing the sound this past week, being somewhere where there was television, I could just tell how negative it was.
I'm totally unplugged from the mainstream news. I really am. I know that some of the news comes on YouTube. I really like YouTube, of course, like the whole world. Just for getting a 5 or 10 minute clip of something, not necessarily the news anymore, because I know that some of the mainstream news sites have clips on YouTube, but I don't even go to their sites because there's just other stuff to look at. So I'm just so detached from the mainstream news. I do browse my local paper that brings in the international stuff through all the wire services, which is just homogenized global news. But other than that, I just don't really get a hold of that. I pay attention to local news because it affects my tax bill. That's a real number that I have to pay every month or every week or every day.
Sure.
And that affects me.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Well, Tim, I am pulling into my driveway, sir.
Oh, very good. It was good talking to you.
Yeah, it was good talking to you as well. I enjoyed it and always enjoy it. And I'll probably be taking a little bit of break from some afternoon commutes for a while, so I probably won't be talking to you.
Okay.
Yes, yeah, I have some things to tend to that maybe in the future I'll disclose, but not now.
All right. So you'll be laying low for the summer, as many people withdraw from their normal routine of summer.
Definitely July and August is a good time to lay low, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. You do get some big heat, I would think, in Southern California as well.
Oh, it's mind-blowingly hot.
Okay, because we, up here, we might get 5 days over 30, which would be over 90.
Yeah.
So you probably get a lot more.
The whole summer will be 90 plus.
Wow, okay. Now, we don't have that. Especially if you live near the lake. The lake is very cold, and it takes a mile inland.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. All right, well, nice chatting with you. Stay in touch. I'm sure we'll communicate through the Hoaxbusters site, hoaxbusterscall.com. That's where you are located. That's where your comments, that's where your audios are, and I do links all the time. Not every single one. I don't listen to every single one, but the ones I do, I post on psychologist.com, as you know, and I appreciate
Absolutely.
It. Absolutely. Give on your site to my site. That's great. A little synergy. I hope new people listen, so that's why it's probably good to just repeating it a little bit. I'm always excited if a new person reaches out and said, "Hey, we listened to this and that." Let's hope it works. Let's hope we get
yes.
the message out.
Yep. And,
all right.
And you know, I'm a fakeologist. Fakeologist is one of my stops on my daily surfing of the interwebs.
Oh, good. Well, I appreciate that.
Always good.
Okay,
well, I will. I'll enjoy your weekend.
All right. Take care. Over and out.
Over and out. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Hi, this is Errol C., and you're listening to Fakeologist Radio.